Welcome to the Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. Produced by LunaWeb, this is show number 11, December 17th, 2009. So amazingly enough, this is the 50th week of the year.
Incredible.
There's like, we've got two to go. Not even two whole weeks left. And it's like watching the last few grains of a one of those hourglass timers, you know, kind of run out.
Like sands in the hourglass, so go the days of our lives.
Now, didn't we hear earlier that they're doing away with some kind of...
They are getting rid of every soap opera from A to Z.
What happened? And these were like, you know, these were the kingdom, the long tail... You know, masters. You know, so after what?
To some extent, they were also the shark jumping masters.
They were.
I worked as a janitor for a couple summers, and the women that I worked with would always like take a break to watch like
their stories.
I don't know if it was like Guiding Light, but like it was kind of cool for the first couple episodes, and I started to get into it. And then they introduced these two characters that were just aliens. Out of nowhere, there were just aliens in the storyline. For no real reason.
But then, Shirley, turns out they're not aliens. It was actually all just a dream, and so-and-so is not pregnant, but somebody else is actually dead. And then someone's twin brother came back and killed someone in a coma. It's just ridiculous.
There was that whole dream thing. Was that started, you know,
Dallas.
Dallas.
It was started by Dallas. You know, so...
Well, Bob Newhart.
I can't, you know, although this is not the soap opera show, it's not the edition of the Social Expedition... I do have to add, when I was in the Navy, in the whole barracks, I was the only guy that had a TV. And we would gather around and we would watch Dynasty. And talk about a completely different soap opera, the nighttime soap opera experience. You get a bunch of guys in a room sitting around hooting and hollering about who should be doing what to who. You know, on one of
these. I was about to say, that has definitely got to be a different Dynasty experience.
Yeah.
My God.
big like event type things, because, you know, we're getting ready to... cross this imaginary line into the next year, and with that we have Mashable's got their open web awards, which if you've missed those, then maybe you're just brand spanking new to social media, because if you haven't had invitations from somebody to go vote on their favorite web award, you've been hiding. So evidently all the voting is in. If you can get the whole long list of the winners over at Mashable.com. But we kind of looked through there and found a few favorites. And so what do you have? Who'd you find?
The most interesting Twitter user to follow was Maureen Johnson. It's just at Maureen Johnson on Twitter. And I just thought that was fun because actually she's a young adult author. And I started following her way back when I started following a blog done by Hank and John Green, who did this thing called Brotherhood 2.0, which was a year-long experiment where they did video blogs every day back and forth to each other. And she's a friend of theirs. And so I've been following her since then. But it's fun to me that she's a young adult author and, you know, not like some of the bigger celebrities that are on Twitter. And so I thought that was cool to see her show up as the most interesting Twitter user to follow, as opposed to, like, you know, Ashton Kutcher or Oprah or somebody ridiculous. Yeah. And, you know, she actually is interesting.
All right, cool. I like the one on there about the Twitter specific thing, the best Twitter app being Hootsuite, just because we use that here, and because also probably, you know, there may be a little starstruck there, I guess, in a way, because I met the guy who started that company.
Oh.
I met him at South by Southwest this last year at an impromptu session that was actually held down the hall, and so, you know, we use that here. It's a great app, and. So that one kind of jumped out at me. And the other one that did for me was, and it's old news to you guys, but Pandora. You know, I've been hearing about Pandora for I don't know how long, but this year is the first year I actually started using it myself and enjoyed that as well. So I kind of gave that one a little highlight.
Yeah, that's a cool little web app. I still prefer Last.fm.
Me too.
Well, now, I've only used it when I was using the iPhone. I never have used it on a desktop. It's just for when I'm out and about.
Yeah, on the desktop it's kind of cool because on the web you can plug in three artists and it'll basically make like an endless mixtape for you based on similar artists to those three artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best results I've ever gotten were throwing in, like, the Kinks for something a little bit older, Yola Tango for something a little bit newer, and Kid Koala, who's, like, a turntable DJ. So it pulls in, like, classic rock, it pulls in, like, current indie rock, and it pulls in a little bit of hip-hop, too.
Oh, I see.
In pretty much the exact proportions that I listen to them in real life, but with artists that I didn't know about.
I just tuned into the Led Zeppelin channel, and I've just been cruising from there.
I've done that.
It suited That's me good just channel. Fine.
Good job. Very good.
But I noticed on there also, there's a all K-pop. It was the best breaking news. And I don't know what that's about. And I think it caught my eye because of the all top. And I don't know about you guys, but I keep seeing these tweets. And I need to like quit following Guy Kawasaki. Because every now and then, there'll be a great captivating headline. You click the link, it takes you to all top. You get like two sentences there, and then you click another link there to take you to some other blog post. And I'm about done with it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I don't know why they do that.
Yeah, that's I read somewhere that like when they were designing the iPod, Steve Jobs like demanded that he be able to find what he wants to find with no more than three or four clicks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's honestly how I kind of feel about web content.
Like, I definitely agree. I actually had an incident just today. I love the way I say incident, too. Like, it was a crime. It was kind of a crime. Where someone had, someone that I follow who's kind of a local organization had tweeted something, and I clicked on it, and it just took me to their Facebook status, referring to the thing that they were talking about. But there was no link with more information about the event. It was just the tweet said, this is going on, and so there was a bit.ly, and it took me to the Facebook status that said, this is going on. And I thought, well, how am I supposed to find out about it? You know, you're not giving me any information, and now you want me to go Google it, basically? Forget that, you know? I'm not in it for that much work. Give me the link, and I'll click it.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I'm more like, give me the link to the final destination. Don't send me on a journey to this thing.
Right, agreed.
Right, exactly.
Trying to get more viewers or something to sell ads. You know, are you trying to get another impression on your Google ads? You're wasting my time. Thank you. You know, a click is still a click.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing if you link to your blog post about what's going on. Like, it's interesting to see people's opinions about the news story that I'm about to click through to. I mean, sometimes you can say that in, like, two or three words before putting the link in your Twitter feed. Other times, like, you know, you've got something a little more dense to say, so you put the link, you mention the story, tell what you think about it, and put the link in the blog post. Like, that's a little bit different, because that's content to content.
Sure.
Whereas, like, clicking a link on Twitter, taking it to your Facebook page, then having to Google to find more, that's...
Right. That was an incident. Thank you very much.
It is a crime.
So, speaking of South by Southwest, you're starting to see more and more information about the 2010 South by Southwest, which is going on from March the 12th. Through March 16th, which is a Friday through a Tuesday. And so no doubt we'll have some kind of social expedition posse heading down that way, you know, trying to put that together, figuring out the costs. It makes a great little road trip. I think it's about eight or nine hours from Memphis with not too many stops. And you can stop along the way in Dallas and check out the grassy knoll and the spot where the Kennedy assassination occurred.
Done that.
Yeah. You know?
Took a tour of the school book depository.
Oh, see,
it was a little morbid, I have to say.
Was it? See, I see most cool stuff like that. I see it in the middle of the night. So photos that I take, I usually have to take on a tripod, you know, because I'm driving someplace, and that's not the destination. So like, where's that in Oklahoma City? You know, the whole the Murrell building or whatever and all that. I've seen that twice now in the middle of the night. You know, a lot of stuff. But which gives you, there's no lines.
No lines, no waiting.
So, hey, start thinking about maybe a road trip from Memphis down to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. This is the interactive portion I was just referring to. You know, it's a huge festival. There are actually three aspects to it. There's interactive, there's film, and there's music. And so, our interests here in the social expedition, at least mine, are the interactive parts. So, you know, although the music pieces, I'm sure, would be great along with the film. But
I mean, I know the interactive part. Obviously, I'm a big music person, but with the interactive part, I'd know a bunch of my blogging heroes pretty much are there every year, so I think I would end up being pretty starstruck, you know, because there would be all these people that I love to read on the internet, and they'd be right there.
Honestly, I think most of my blogging heroes will be at the music section, but, I mean, I write a geeky public radio blog, and public radio's, like, All Songs Considered is going to be at South by Southwest Music rather than interactive.
Okay.
So...
It's a very unique experience.
I'm sure. I think it's different. Like any of the three would be very, very unique.
It's different all the time. The one of the other things going on down there is the web awards, their own interactive web awards that they have down there, and they talk about just pointing out specific applications that are out there that are very useful. And I've always found that to be a fun evening, as well as being able to discover new kinds of apps that are out there. Some of the apps that we use or have used here at LunaWeb, I found out about from the Web Awards there. One of them specifically is Animoto. And then the other part of South by Southwest is if you go to the trade show portion, you can meet these companies that are there. You know, so this is, you know, the folks from Animoto. You know, also the good folks from Creative Commons. Wear good shoes because you'll be walking your tail off. Anyway, so he coming up, you know, here in Memphis, as far as any additional events that we have coming up, we've got pretty much, I think everybody's kind of on cruising out through the rest of the year here, which is just, you know, a short time away. But then coming into January, we've got the Social Expedition Breakfast. It's going to be that first Wednesday.
It'll be January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to check out socialexpedition.com for more information about that. But we do, of course, still have podcasts that will be going on throughout the end of the year. We're not slowing down. And this Friday, we're actually doing our last core conversation of the year, because the next two Fridays are kind of, you know, big important holidays and, you know,
blah, blah, blah,
Christmas, New Year's. But this Friday, we are going to be doing predictions for social media and technology for 2010. So you definitely want to be a part of that. Our show last week ended up being really interesting, talking about predictions from 2009 and how they panned out. So I have a feeling that this is going to be pretty good based on what we heard last week. So you definitely want to tune in for that at 11:30 on Friday.
You know, leap out, and this predictions, you know, kind of having some insight on what's going to be coming down the road is much more about what's going on in business these days. You really almost can't wait for things to kind of pan out and see where they're going to happen, because they're changing so fast. So if you wait for a steady state on anything right now, things to settle down, it's old news. It'll be gone, and then it'll be new things coming along. So you pretty much have to get in the prediction mode anyhow, and you're going to be wrong sometimes. It's okay. But sometimes, you know, let's hope you hit some bullseyes. And go a little bit further down the road and ride some waves. I hadn't thought too much about that, but it has occurred to me more and more as I hear people say, "Well, I'm going to wait to see where that goes." Well, by the time it gets to where it's going, it'll be gone. You know, maybe that ties back into Jeff Livingston's book, "Now Is Gone." You know, we're just seeing that so much more all the time.
Yeah. So I was actually not feeling real well and had to come in late yesterday. I know we recorded the interview we're about to listen to a little bit early. What did I miss?
It was Carrie Hayes, and he is very busy doing some amongst other things, a lot of social media type stuff for transparency between the citizenry here in Memphis and the mayor's office.
Well, very cool. Well, let's go ahead and give that a listen.
Okay, our guest this week is Carrie Hayes. He is the Special Assistant for Research and Innovation for Mayor Wharton's office. So welcome to the expedition.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Wow, Carrie, that's quite a title.
It is quite a title. I'm fortunate in the sense that it's a new position. There is not anybody that I'm replacing necessarily at City Hall, but that's also fairly intimidating at the same time.
So you will be the first former Special
exactly.
At some point.
Yes, at some point. At some point. Hopefully not too soon, but at some point, yeah.
Well, that's outstanding. And so a lot of that involves, or some part of that involves social media.
It does, yeah, sure. I worked on Mayor Wharton's campaign over the summer, and he brought me in specifically to do some of that work, which, you know, I don't mind saying that, you know, of all the sort of candidates that were involved, I think he had you know, one of, if not the most sort of robust social media operations during the campaign. Not because it was something flashy or something clever that he felt needed to be used for that reason, but because it really was an efficient and smart way for us to communicate with a lot of people all over the city, all over the region, really, at one time. And so one of my charges, you're right, in this new role is to sort of keep those tools alive, adapt them to some of City Hall's uses in a non-political way, but still with the idea that it's about information, it's about communication, it's about making sure that as many people as possible know about some of the great things that are happening in Memphis and some of the projects that we're trying to move forward with. Mm-hmm. So I think when I left the office yesterday, we were at something like 4,564 Facebook fans and 1,650-something Twitter followers. And so you'll see, you know, one of our next big pushes is to try to get a YouTube channel populated with some videos of the mayor talking about things. Sort of a regular YouTube address is sort of our idea. And moving farther down the line, at some point in the next year, we will see a new city website come online, mm-hmm. Which is a huge project of mine, something I'm extremely excited about, and I think we'll have a range of applications along those lines.
Now, that YouTube channel, that's a good idea, because although you've got a fantastic Facebook presence, their little video piece on there is still evidently, you know, being finalized.
It's a little limited, sure. it works for some things. I mean, I think one of the things that I think we have to keep in mind when we're sort of dealing on the consumer end of social media is, you know, YouTube still has sort of the biggest brand of all these sort of online video places. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some that I could say have better features, better quality, things that I like better, but we still know that YouTube, among most people, has the most sort of traction as a place where people want to go to watch video. And so making sure that we have a channel carved out on there where our videos can live, even if they are duplicated on Facebook and Vimeo and some of these other places, saying that you have a YouTube channel still has some equity mm-hmm. with a large swath of the population that we're trying to reach.
And, you know, so I think it's fairly easy for people to see, especially, you know, just after the, you know, the presidential election and also our own mayoral election, how social media is used to kind of get the word out as far as that on the campaign side of things, mm-hmm. on a marketing and a PR standpoint.
Sure.
But what about, you know, some of the goals with regard to the whole transparent government?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it's hugely significant. And, you know, what we're really talking about are two issues. One is appropriate use of social media in a government setting, which is to make documents available, things like city contractors, contracts have been executed, positions that have been filled, any way that we're spending the taxpayers' money, we want to make sure that we're putting that up front as close as possible to their fingertips as possible. So making some adjustments to our current website where that information can live and then sort of broadcasting it out through our social media channels, that's in progress, something we plan to have implemented you know, before this month is out, certainly before next month is over, which is mandated in the mayor's transparency order. The other big piece of this, which is in some ways even more significant, is facilitating broadband deployment throughout more of the city, because broadband, you know, Memphis currently is not one of the most highly broadband penetrated cities mm-hmm. In the United States. All sorts of indicators that follow that, having to do with poverty and so forth, but just last night, I was attending on the mayor's behalf an FCC hearing. Memphis is one of five cities, in addition to Charleston, Austin, Texas, Boston, Massachusetts, and I believe Seattle, if I'm not mistaken, where the FCC has come to hear from citizens about what are the barriers to broadband access, what does the federal government, need to be doing differently to make those resources more available, what role does local government have to play in all that. So, they're working towards a plan. Last night was just the first step of many that the FCC and the United States Congress are taking. But we're hopeful and optimistic that more Memphians will have more routine access to high-speed internet, which then opens up a million doors to things that they can do to communicate with City Hall, with us, to ask questions, to find things that they need. Not only transparency things, but really rudimentary e-government things, paying their taxes online, paying traffic tickets online, requesting documents when it comms to you know, land use applications, things like that. that you shouldn't have to come all the way downtown and find a parking space in front of City Hall and come into a counter. You should be able to go to a beautifully designed, well-organized web portal and find those things. So that's a long answer to your question, but those are the kind of things that we have on our horizon.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I mean, there's probably no short answer, period. Mm-hmm. Those hearings last night, that was over at the Civil Rights Museum.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
And we are having a podcast event.
Oh, very good.
People, so we missed it. We actually had one of our folks that was there, Joe Spake. He had to cut out early so he could make it to those hearings. And, you know, when you're talking about government and the whole, you know, access to the digital realm and some of these things that through government become available through the social realm, even within the digital, it seems like we've had the digital divide, the digital haves and the digital have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems now, even within the digital haves, that we're starting to see even more of a division there just within that,
sure,
on that side of the fence.
Sure.
And that's going to be a huge challenge.
Sure.
For government.
Sure. I mean, one of the mayor's real strong mandates when it comes to trying to bridge the digital divide is not broadband availability. Even broadband affordability is not the full answer to the problem. It has got to be supplemented with a strong programming, training, education component so that people understand the full range of things that are available to them when it comes to using the internet. That's where we're really starting to see, I think, some of the separation you're talking about. Not only is the problem being exacerbated extremely quickly because those people that are now well into adulthood that don't have a lot of access to the internet are being left behind when it comes to completing a college degree, finding a job, finding a better home, some sort of better situation. But even those that have some adequate access to the internet are not necessarily realizing all the things that they can use it for, which is unfortunate.
So, is there a move looking at trying to put little hub kiosks of access around, or trying to wire up everybody, or wireless? Or,
you know, I don't know. I'm not quite sure, and I think that was one of the outcomes from last night's hearings, is trying to sort of see what the resources are and what's feasible from a cost standpoint, from an infrastructure standpoint. I know, just in the little research that I've done, that you know, municipal Wi-Fi has been attempted on a lot of different scales and a lot of different kinds of communities, with some different, you know, there's putting nodes on power lines and doing things. I don't know quite what the right solution for us is. I certainly would like to make sure that we're prioritizing those neighborhoods where there currently isn't any. Mm-hmm. And if that means it's built around a community center or a library or some other sort of existing community asset,
right,
as sort of a first step, that's certainly something I think we would be favorably disposed to, but that's fortunately for us, that's really the FCC's charge at the moment.
Gotcha.
And two, I mean, their real challenge, which is a pretty awesome one, is finding out what the right solution is really for the nation, because their mandate is a national broadband plan,
right,
which is every bit as full a mandate as the interstate highway system was, mm-hmm, you know, in the 40s. So I have an enormous amount of respect for them, and I'm sure that in 65 days or whenever their deadline is, they'll have something for us to consider that's meets all those requirements and hopefully answers those questions.
It'll be the first experiment, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
sure it's not, you know, whatever happens or whatever they come up with, it's going to require some refining, and we're going to,
sure,
learn a whole lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But we won't learn anything until we actually do stuff.
That's right.
It's great to see some things happen.
And it's a hugely exciting time. I mean, I think we're just now at the point where we're sort of seeing the political will meeting the resources, meeting the need, that'll hopefully get something accomplished. And I think the implications for Memphis are absolutely mind-boggling in a good way.
We were over at a pod camp. I'm sorry, it was a bar camp over in Nashville, and we're hearing from some folks there that were talking about getting the rural parts, mm-hmm, of West Tennessee connected via co-working spaces.
Yeah,
and so that these folks could have digital type positions, jobs, and be part of the economy who had been displaced because of the manufacturing type positions that they had before had moved elsewhere.
Sure.
And so that was exciting to see, that co-working time.
Yeah. It's an interesting challenge because it's one of those places, and Tennessee is an interesting sort of case study in this, because we have some incredibly dense urban areas and some incredibly sparse rural areas, mm, oftentimes within a very compact geographic area. Mm-hmm. And so both, the range of sort of socioeconomic issues that you're dealing with and the influences there may be quite disparate, but on this issue, the challenge is pretty much the same. I mean, economically, as it relates to job discovery and real nuts and bolts job application, we're missing something unless we can bring these people into the digital conversation.
What is a Merrill's office challenge that social media, that you're looking for social media to come in to kind of save the day or really, really forward, really help out a lot?
There are a couple, and I guess that they all sort of synthesize to me in using these tools for Memphians to sort of see each other, what kind of great things are happening in the city. Because mm-hmm. I think something that we haven't always seen in the past is just the rich and abundant number of really good, interesting, exciting things that are happening in the city of Memphis. And the array of really interesting ideas that are out there, some good, some bad, but they're all, there's no shortage of ideas in the city. There's no shortage of enthusiasm of people really trying to think critically about how we can solve some of the bigger challenges. And I think that that's something that social media is now sort of able to be, some sunlight that's sort of showing people, if I'm concerned about crime, then the person in the house next to me is also concerned about it. And things that I'm worried about with my kid's school, person across the street has the same challenges. So why aren't we working together to try to organize and tackle some of these things? That's mm-hmm. really where I think we're going to be developing some more instruments to allow that sort of self-organization at the grassroots level to take place. Right. And if the mayor's office is in a position to take a leadership role on some of that, great. If we are a repository of some of the great ideas that come out of that, that's even better. The big thing I say to everybody is that research and innovation, which is in my title, does not mean that I'm going to have all the most innovative ideas. By no means am I the most innovative person that I know, much less the most innovative person in Memphis. But if I can do anything, it's to sort of try to let citizens know that there is now a culture of innovation in City Hall and a culture that appreciates and welcomes ideas from people that maybe weren't always being heard before. The best idea that we're going to have is not one that I'm going to come up with. It's one that I'm going to see in a Facebook comment thread. It's one that will be suggested to me via a Twitter direct message or relayed to me via text message or something like that, that's really worth drilling into and exploring. We're already seeing some things in and around homelessness, looking at some best practices and things that are happening in other cities that seem to be working that I don't think we could have known about or would have found out about as quickly had it not been through some of our social media tools.
Outstanding.
So just any number of, these sort of big obstacle things that Memphis sort of gets down in the mouth about, crime, poverty, public education, the solutions are out there. And certainly, I can tell you firsthand, the energy and the enthusiasm to solve them is out there. So hopefully we can use some of our web tools to put people in touch with each other and then put them in touch with the mayor's office in a way that'll get things done.
Man, it feels like it's definitely time mm-hmm. for Memphis right now. It seems like every conversation we have, we it always diverts over into this, how there's so many great things going on in Memphis.
Yeah.
And how do we let more people know about all the cool stuff happening?
It's a city of best kept secrets, for better or for worse, and some of those secrets need to be heard more broadly. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what we're trying to facilitate.
And, that's part of what Social Expedition is here, trying to pop the top on this thing and let some of this goodness out and let other folks find out about it, especially, even through other podcasts as well. So, hey, wrapping things up here, Carrie, tell us where's a good spot to go to find you on Facebook, Twitter,
Sure. Facebook.com/MayorACWharton is sort of City Hall's or the mayor's office official Facebook page. Twitter.com/MayorACWharton is our official Twitter feed. Those are the best places for now to sort of check in with us and see what the mayor's up to and to sort of find out what the next big thing is that we're talking about in the city.
Great. We were taking a look at the Facebook page earlier and see there's at least, it looks like a daily update as far as what's going on there.
Yeah, we're trying to sort of keep people apprised of the things that really have the mayor's attention. I saw on Twitter this morning, he let us know that he's in Washington, D.C., going to a holiday gathering at the White House. So fun things like that, trying to let people know that he is out in the world representing us and trying to do good things.
Now, so just out of curiosity, and this, you know, this may be classified information, but you know, so what is the mayor tweeting on? Is he got a BlackBerry? Is he a BlackBerry guy?
He has a couple of BlackBerries.
Oh, really?
that he is juggling almost constantly. One, I'm not sure if there's one for Twitter and one for email or what, but he is an extremely hardware friendly guy.
Great.
And is never seen without them.
Maybe he and Obama can talk about their love for the BlackBerry.
I'm sure. Well, he'll come back with some new piece of technology that he's excited about, I have no doubt.
Well, Kerry, hey, thanks so much for coming back out and joining us today and sharing I know your busy schedule, you know, with us and what's going on here.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, well, you know, that again was Kerry Hayes from Mayor Wharton's office.
You really want to check him out. He's a very dynamic individual. Follow the mayor on Facebook as well as Twitter, and see what's going on there. Kerry's going to be taking good care of that and trying to create that transparency that is greatly needed. So.
And speaking of things going on in Memphis, mm-hmm. in social media, segue. As usual, we like to highlight some things happening in the city. Actually, something kind of cool you may have seen on Twitter yesterday. South of Beale, they were tweeting out about a litter of puppies that was found. I mean, I don't recall, was it found like near the restaurant, or I don't know if one of their servers found the puppies.
One of their servers found a litter of puppies, and
so it ended up
good homes for them.
Right, it ended up they were found homes. Most, if not all, I don't know what the final count is. Were actually found homes through Twitter. Through people tweeting out that there were these puppies and tweeting pictures.
Yeah, pictures of the most adorable puppies I think you've ever seen.
So it was pretty. I just thought that was pretty cool. That, you know, those little puppies have a home. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Twitter.
Wow. So the Humane Society probably ought to take a good second look at what's going on there with that. And
no kidding.
Yeah.
You know, it's those, you know, getting those images across.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
A picture of a puppy will pretty much melt most anyone's heart. So, our Memphis Tweeter of the Week this week is Ardent Music. You can follow them at twitter.com/ardentmusic, A-R-D-E-N-T. Basically, they're just promoting Memphis music, you know, and they're doing kind of links to articles, reviews, news, that kind of stuff, but also promoting concerts and tweeting, of course, about Memphis music history, which is always fun because we do have a lot of history here. And
that place is chock full of it. You
absolutely.
Know, like, as I'm listening to a ton of music, I kind of grew up admiring a lot of records that were recorded at Ardent Studios. And it's just very cool to have that in town, have that still be active, and
be able
to like follow and catch up on the history that they have there.
So with that, hey, a big shout out to our fellow podcasters out there. Stop by podcastmemphis.com, and we're assembling a list of podcasters there in Memphis, as well as links to resources to get you going on your own podcast. And it's a very friendly group of people, very open and very willing to share information. It was nice to get together and meet a few of them. Look forward to doing that again sometime.
Well, so, I think that's all we've got for this week. So
one more show left. We got one more left in the year.
More show left in the year, so that's almost all we have left.
That's not right.
That's not right.
We have two more shows left in the year.
Thank you. Okay. I'm glad you can count.
We have one next week and one on the 30th.
On the 30th. Hey, that'll be a birthday show, I guess. You gonna be
it
here?
Will be, and that will be sans
Wait,
me.
Are you gonna be? Oh.
I'll be on the Big Bird going to England for New Year's. So, I would love to tell you that I'll be thinking about you, but I will not. It would be a lie, so I won't say it.
We'll send you text messages or something, so you won't be able to help but think about it.
Please blow up my phone with text messages that are going to cost me $1 million because I'm in another country. That sounds
that
like
what
a great
happens?
Idea.
Do you still get them? Oh, that's not nice.
No, it is not nice. So refrain from texting me, everyone.
All right.
Well,
hey, join us on Friday.
Yeah,
join us on Friday for the core conversation. And
we'll
bring
see
your
you
predictions.
Next week.
See you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. Your hosts are Dave Barger, Elizabeth Kaywine, and Matthew Crawford Trissler, who edits the podcast. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskell, available at ericmaskell.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.
All right. That was pretty cool, guys.
Pretty cool, guys.
Wait, how did you get in here?